What if I told you that one of history's greatest pianists, a child prodigy who performed for royalty and later shaped the careers of legendary musicians, believed the secret to piano mastery wasn't about practicing more, but about thinking differently? Josef Hoffmann, the pianist Rachmaninoff called the greatest alive, left behind a slim volume in 1908 that quietly revolutionized how we understand the relationship between technique and soul. His insights remain startlingly relevant today, offering a roadmap not just for pianists, but for anyone seeking to master a craft where precision meets passion. The piano isn't just an instrument, it's a mirror reflecting the player's inner world, and learning to play it well means learning to see yourself clearly. The piano possesses rare musical honesty. Unlike instruments that bend pitch or add vibrato, it delivers exactly what you strike, no embellishments to hide behind. This limitation becomes its strength. Every hesitation and moment of clarity rings out with unforgiving precision. This singular voice explains the piano's enduring appeal. It conveys melody, harmony, bass, and counterpoint simultaneously. You become a one-person orchestra where every mistake is yours alone. Yet this vulnerability creates profound intimacy between player and instrument. The piano's pure quality means we can listen for hours without fatigue. Its directness doesn't shout or seduce, it simply speaks truth. Pianists often prejudge music by composer, assuming all Beethoven needs gravitas or all Chopin drips sentiment. This ignores that great composers regularly surprise themselves, writing beyond their typical boundaries when inspiration struck. Bach, labeled purely intellectual, wrote the deeply emotional chromatic fantasy. Mozart, associated with classical clarity, composed passages of striking romantic turbulence. These weren't anomalies, they were moments when genius transcended category. Approach each composition as a separate entity, studying its unique character rather than stamping it with preconceived notions. Your interpretation should reflect your personality, but that freedom requires something non-negotiable, sovereign mastery of technique. Think of technique as your artistic bank account. You need substantial deposits before writing checks. Only when scales, arpeggios, and finger independence become second nature does the limitless vista of artistic interpretation open up. Without this foundation, freedom becomes chaos, and expression becomes excuse-making for sloppy playing. Most people practice wrong, banging away for hours and wondering why they're not improving. Your brain treats practice like a camera treats light. Sloppy practice creates blurry photographs that won't sharpen later. Morning practice offers tremendous advantages when your mind is fresh. 30 minutes before breakfast can yield more progress than 2 hours of exhausted evening drilling. Never practice more than 2 hours at a stretch. Your brain needs breaks to process what it's learned. Take walks between sessions. Let the music marinate unconsciously. Practice with restrained power rather than constant loudness. Prepare your finger for great force, but strike moderately to develop control, like a martial artist practicing slow-motion kicks. Avoid practicing at the same time daily. It kills spontaneity. Limit finger exercises to 30 minutes maximum. They're preliminary warmers, not the main event. For memorization, start small. Analyze the piece's structure. Play it exactly with the music several times. Then mentally trace it away from the piano. Hours later, attempt to play from memory. If stuck, study only that passage, then restart from the beginning. Never skip difficult sections. This disrupts logical flow and creates gaps in your mental map. Instead, derive technical exercises from problematic passages, but regularly play the entire piece to ensure improved sections work in context. Your hands should feel like water flowing over rocks, purposeful but never rigid. Play primarily with fingers, keeping arms and shoulders loose. Hold hands nearly horizontal with slight inclination toward keys, fingers gently bent, aiming for key centers with fingertips. True legato, the seamless connection between notes, is fundamentally more efficient than non-legato because fingers glide sideways rather than lifting completely. Think of walking versus hopping. One conserves energy and creates flow, the other exhausts. In true legato, two fingers work simultaneously, creating a smooth handoff like relay runners passing a baton. The pedal is simultaneously your greatest ally and mortal enemy. Your ear, not your foot, must govern its use. Press down with quick, definite motion immediately after striking keys, never simultaneously. This allows dampers to briefly stop previous vibrations before sustaining new ones, preventing cacophonous mixing. Beyond mechanics, the pedal provides coloring, what we call piano charm. Like French horns in an orchestra, it creates a glazing effect that unifies various tone colors. You can even produce glass-like effects by purposefully mixing non-harmonic tones, evoking winds, waves, or rustling leaves. But never use pedal to cover imperfections or compensate for weak finger technique. Playing in style means rendering a piece with absolute justice to its contents, not adding frills or following fashion. The composer embedded everything needed through notes, pauses, dynamics, and annotations. Your job isn't to improve their vision, but to understand and transmit it faithfully. Here's the paradox. Even with identical study, 10 players produce 10 different interpretations through unconscious individuality. A performer's unique touch, timing, and emotional responses naturally color the performance. True style emerges from complete fidelity to what's written, allowing natural individuality to shine through, like 10 people reading the same poem aloud, revealing different dimensions through identical words. Rubato, the subtle pushing and pulling of tempo, is essential but governed by taste. The principle is balance. Time shortened in one phrase must be added to another. You might rush slightly through an ascending passage, then linger on the arrival point. Perfect rubato comes from momentary impulse, responding to the music's emotional demands in real time. However, only eminent players with deep instincts can safely trust these impulses entirely. Average players should carefully consider time shifts and prepare their execution without impairing naturalness. Hofmann studied with Anton Rubinstein from 16 to 18 through a revolutionary method. Rubinstein never demonstrated by playing. Instead, he used suggestive comparisons. Is it dramatic, tragic, lyric, romantic, humorous? Forcing Hofmann to find his own solutions. Most remarkably, Rubinstein refused to provide fingerings, telling Hofmann to play it with your nose, but make it sound well. After Hofmann's Hamburg debut, Rubinstein declared, "I have told you all I know about legitimate piano playing." They never met again. Rubinstein died shortly after, leaving Hofmann grief-stricken but fully formed. This represents the highest form of education, focusing on musical meaning rather than technical minutiae. The greatest pianists always subordinated technique to their message. Technique is like money in life, necessary but insufficient alone. It should be a chest of tools from which the artist draws what's needed, not an end in itself. For pianistic success, early musical education is crucial. Pieces learned before age 10 remain more firmly in memory. Study harmony and counterpoint to transform guesswork into knowledge. There is no royal road to becoming a great pianist. Students must progress atom by atom, mastering each difficulty completely. The piano doesn't lie. Your fingers will speak the truth of your preparation, your dedication, and ultimately, your soul.